Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, in our last program, Jude Fleury and I began a discussion of Charles Krauthammer's superb style of writing essays. Now, today, I want to continue our discussion using some of Jude's favorite essays. So, welcome back, Jude.
Thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you here with me in the studio. So, I think we kind of got cut short on our discussion of that the first essay we were talking about, the Winston Churchill, the indispensable man, or the indispensable man. And so I kind of let it go a little bit over time just to let you finish, but I did want to talk about that last paragraph. And I just think that this is where that one analyst says, "His pieces are tightly reasoned, almost commanding our approval and agreement." And I think this last paragraph kind of proves that. And he goes on and he says, "And who is the hero of that story? Who slew the dragon? Yes, it was the ordinary man, the taxpayer, the grunt who fought and won the wars. Yes, it was America and its allies. Yes, it was the great leaders, FDR, De Gaulle, Adenauer, Truman, John Paul II, Thatcher, Reagan. But above all, victory required one man without whom the fight would have been lost at the beginning. It required Winston Churchill." Now, to me, that's that last statement is the zinger of the whole essay. As he comes back, and of course he's talking about, overcoming communism, and that, you've got, it's kind of like you were saying in the last program, is he has a really good grasp of the big picture. But he, in that big picture, he's given you, hey, there was a lot of other leaders doing a lot of these great things, but if Winston Churchill wasn't there, none of that would have been there. And so I think it's really a masterful way to write an essay. I mean, it's something that I'm going to study more and really want to try and imitate. So.
Yeah, if you read this, I've read this whole book, skipped a couple of them, but I read pretty much this whole book, and every single essay without fail always ends with some statement that leaves you thinking or some statement that sums it all up, just something really pithy at the end that kind of gives you this interesting flavor in your mouth as you stop reading, which – it's a great way. All of his endings are really good. He's kind of got it down to a science almost. Just making it end in a way that keeps you thinking and is just really satisfying. So, yeah, and a lot of them are really funny as well.
Right. One thing that kind of gets me with it is that it makes you want to read the next one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a mystery novel. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, what's going to happen in the next chapter? So, but anyway, I just think it's so good that hopefully everyone out there has bought the book and you've begun reading it. And like I said, besides Jude, we're going to have other special people in to talk about essays. I think that'll make it a little bit more interesting. All right, so Jude, let's move on to one of your next favorite essays, and this is be on page 209. And the title of that essay is "The Real Message of Creationism." Now, this is another hot topic. So it's probably a little hotter than Winston Churchill. So it's interesting that just on the Trumpet Hour recently, we've talked about the Scopes trial, and this essay also talks about the Scopes trial, but I think it's a little different way. So I'll just let you take over and just tell me what you think of this essay here.
Yeah, so this is my favorite, or one of my favorite essays, because it's a rare time when Charles Krauthammer discusses religion. He doesn't do this too many other times in the book as far as I remember. But, you know, obviously he doesn't have the whole truth. He doesn't know everything that's in the Bible. He just hasn't been called yet. And, you know, that's okay. But it's still interesting to see what his thoughts are about, you know, the liberal side, which is a lot farther from the truth than Charles Krauthammer is. Obviously, you know, the Scopes trial is something that's been romanticized and played up, and he even mentions Inherit the Wind. I'm not sure. I think that's a book. Maybe it's a movie.
Yes.
Book?
I think it was a book, but it's also been made into a movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, he says it's the great fable and rather fictional Inherit the Wind. So this trial's been played up, and he says it was as if they were blue-nosed know-nothings, wanted to persecute some poor teacher for teaching evolution. And he explains, actually, it was engineered by the American Civil Liberties Union, eager to test a case to overturn a new Tennessee law prohibiting the teaching of evolution. So, you know, it even says John Scopes was a football coach. He was a substitute teacher. And he says he couldn't even remember if he'd taught any evolution. So
right.
The reason why I like this is because I just learned so much from it. I mean, I'm not an expert on a Scopes trial by any means, but
I'd agree with you 100%. I mean, I've seen Inherit the Wind, and I've known about the Scopes trial, but because I don't really have an interest in evolution or creationism, you know, you kind of just say, well, that's kind of in the past. Mm-hmm. But I do think, again, this paragraph, I have underlined it for myself because, one, I saw the American Civil Liberties Union, you know. So here, they were involved in it. They paid the expenses for the prosecution. I mean, it's just amazing. But then, it's like John Scopes, he was willing to take the rap. You know, and like you said, he couldn't even remember whether he even taught any evolution. And so I mean, that tells you something. I think even very important for today. I mean, this is what this country's been experiencing since Trump has been made president. Is you've got the American Civil Liberties Union. They're always, you know, they're always coming out in the news somewhere. And, you know, we were just watching a few things last night on Fox News about this new thing, you know, about, you know, President Trump calling Ukraine and all that. And there was a constitutional lawyer came on and said, this is his job. You know, he has to uphold the laws of the United States. And if the laws of the United States are broken, certainly by a vice president and the vice president's son, the president not only has a right, he has the obligation to call and find out. And, you know, who do these other people think they are? And essentially this one lawyer said they're actually weaponizing the Constitution to get the president when he's trying to uphold the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So you can see that you know, there was a lot of shady dealing going on even with the Scopes trial. It says, he goes on to say, there, I'll just read this paragraph. Son of Scopes is not quite what it seems either. The twist in the modern saga is the injection of creationism as the scientific alternative to evolution. So let's be plain. Creationism, which presents Genesis as literally and historically true, is not science. It is faith crudely disguised as science. And, you know, I had to think about that for quite a while, and I think he's right. It's not science. Creationism isn't science. You know, it's talking about, you know, the creation, but even creationists are wrong. And he knows it. He says it's not science because it violates the central scientific canon that a theory must at least in principle be disprovable. Creationism is not. He said any evidence that might be brought, fossil, geological, astronomical, to contradict the idea that the universe is no more than 6,000 years old, is simply explained away as false clues deliberately created by God at the very beginning. That's what creationists believe. And you know, I have a few other comments about this I'll make in a minute. He says, why? To test our faith? To make fools of modern science? This is hardly even good religion. God may be mysterious, but he's certainly not malicious. You know, I mean, think about what they're saying about God. He's saying, oh yeah, I put all these things in there just to fool people. God doesn't do that. And the thing is, of course, you know, our belief about Genesis is it's definitely a matter of faith, but it's also a matter of fact. And the thing is, we know that the earth is more than 6,000 years old. And we also know that the universe is more than 6,000 years old. And actually, what you have in Genesis, and you know, Mr. Herbert Armstrong proved this years ago, is between Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, I mean, Genesis 1 verse 1 and Genesis 1 verse 2, there's a time gap there of potentially millions of years. We don't know how long the gap was. And then actually, what begins in Genesis 1 verse 2 is actually a recreation or a rejuvenation of the earth after, you know, Satan the devil and his cohorts destroyed it. And so the thing is, you know, we as a church, we don't stand for creationism, you know, but we stand by the facts of the Bible, you know. And I know my wife's family are all scientists, and, you know, they've picked at creationism, and they've kind of associated that with me because they know I believe the Bible. And I said, I have nothing to do with creationism. And I said, they said, well, the earth is probably millions of years old. I said, yeah, I agree with that. And they go, what? And you're religious? You agree with that? I said, yeah. I mean, we know that it's older than 6,000 years. So in some ways, you know, when we talk about this, this is a religious piece. But I think he has some common sense. Even though he doesn't know the whole truth, he still has a little more common sense about him than, let's say, even the creationists do. And I would tend to agree with him that he says down in that third paragraph down there, he says, creationism has no part in the science curriculum of any serious country. Because it's all false. But notice he says, still, I see no reason why biblical creation could not be taught in the schools. And now he doesn't have the best view there. I'll just go on there and say, not as science, of course, but for its mythic grandeur and its moral dimensions. So he sees the morality, but he doesn't see the truth, and he calls it mythic. So in some ways, I think that that paragraph alone shows me, you know, how clear his thinking was. But the thing is, as you said, very beginning in the last program, God wasn't calling him. Mm-hmm. God didn't open his mind to the whole truth. So anyway, that's my point. So you can go on now, since it's your favorite there.
I think it's interesting to look at the origin of this whole idea that God is malicious, or at least in the way that he says he is, by making the earth seem as if it were older than it is to test our faith. You know, he says God may be mysterious, but he is certainly not malicious. But the whole origin of this idea, there was an interesting some painter a long time ago was painting a picture of Adam and Eve, and he's painting Adam, and he gets down to, he's going to paint his navel, and he goes, hang on a minute, did Adam have a navel? Because he wasn't born, you know, God created him.
Right.
So it might not seem like a big issue, but he started talking to some people and asking them, like church officials, should I paint Adam with a navel or not? And it was a big controversy because they didn't know if, you know, God would create Adam with the appearance of prior life or if they would create him, you know, with the appearance that he had just been created. So he kind of got around the issue. He painted Adam, and then he just surreptitiously covered his navel with a vine or something.
Right.
And if you look at old religious paintings, frequently of Adam anyway, frequently if his navel is covered by some sort of leaf or something because of this controversy. And I forget which scientist it was, but there was a scientist that you know, kind of extrapolated on that principle and said, well, you know, surely God would have created Adam with the navel. And if he created Adam with the appearance of, you know, prior life, surely he would have created the earth with past symbols of existence, like the fossils in the ground, you know, Krauthammer mentions geological clues, astronomical clues. So, and that was the prevailing religious theory of creationists. And like Krauthammer says, he's just thinking about it. He hasn't had any truth revealed to him. But that makes God out to be malicious. Like, he wants to give us false information to see how good our faith is. And if you look at the God of the Bible, that's not at all what he does. God wants to give us the truth so that, you know, we know the truth, and so that we don't have to, you know, be in this cloud of darkness all the time. And so really both sides, evolution and creation, he mentions that Krauthammer mentions that he says the twist of the modern saga is the injection of creationism as the scientific alternative to evolution. So there's this polarization of thought, like we have Republican and Democrat, and there's creation and evolution, as if those are the only two options. It's not okay to just follow the facts and not apply to either of these ideologies. But, you know, that's just the nature of man, always wanting to divide things into neat little boxes so that you're either a creationist or an evolutionist. You're either a Democrat or a Republican. But that's there's no room in man's thinking for, you know, just following the truth or following the facts. And that's what we do in the church. So it's interesting that Krauthammer, you know, obviously he isn't called and he doesn't know, but he still sees the error in, you know, this polarization. And he says, well, hang on, can't we just follow the facts of science and not necessarily subscribe to evolution, but just look at what the facts say and try to develop our opinions based on that. So that was interesting for me. That's kind of why I like this essay so much.
Oh, I think in some ways this whole essay brings out the fact that how unique Mr. Herbert Armstrong was with understanding the Bible and understanding the truth. And we know that obviously God was leading him to open his mind to the truth. But he's one that followed the facts, and he's taught all of us, when it comes to the Bible, let the Bible interpret the Bible. And the thing is, if a lot of the whole problem with creationism is they're interpreting the Bible what they want it to say. Instead of saying, well, let's look at the facts. I mean, here if you have all these fossils of, you know, dinosaurs and all of that, it would obviously prove to them that there was a different, you know, state on the earth. There was a different life on the earth. I mean, even all the oil we have is indication there was all these plants that were crushed under a cataclysm that, you know, makes the oil. I mean, that they came from the plant life that was in the oceans and the water. I know I took a 4-credit archaeology course when I was in college, and we went into the kind of like the hills of Pennsylvania, and we found all kinds of fossils, and it was absolutely proven that part of Pennsylvania, even though it was all hills, was under the ocean at one time. And so you know that it tells you that there had to been great upheavals on the earth. And, you know, look at all the salt we have from Utah. That was a big ocean. I mean, there was an ocean there that got, you know, dried up. And we have all this, you know, unlimited amount of salt now. And so if you could take those facts and then read the Bible the way it is, and it's clear if you have a good understanding of Genesis 1 and Genesis 1:2, that it says the earth became like tohu and bohu. It became without form and void. So something happened. The Genesis 1:1 indication that it was a perfect creation. Genesis 1:2 says, hey, there were some bad cataclysms that happened, and that God had to come actually down and renew the face of the earth that man could live on it. So you see, if you're really wanting to follow the truth, God's going to show you the truth. You know, and again, I think he does say, you know, that there are some really good things that should be done. I thought there was kind of one of the funny things, and I think even the first paragraph, he does have a sense of humor about it. And I think in some ways, I think he also knows how not to tick people off too much so they don't stop reading his stuff. But even that first paragraph, it says, when the Kansas Board of Education voted recently to eliminate evolution from the state science curriculum, the sophisticates had quite a yuck. One editorial cartoon had an ape reclining in a tree telling his mate, "We're descended from the Kansas school board." I thought that was a hilarious way to begin an essay on what you would consider a really touchy subject. Mm-hmm. You know, that could incite, could incite riots. And I think even the Scopes trial at one time probably did incite, you know, some of the riots. But also, I think, there's a real, he does have this grand sense of reasonableness. I mean, if you look at Krauthammer's writing, he's just reasonable. He said, creationism, this is the middle of page 210, it says, creationism has no part in the science curriculum of any serious country. Still, I see no reason why biblical creation could not be taught in the schools, not as science, of course, but for its mythic grandeur and moral dimensions. So we can skip the mythic grandeur, but he does see there is a morality of knowing, you know, that there is a God that did create Adam and Eve, created the male and female. I mean, there is very few people that believe that today. I mean, they believe in evolution, and that's why you can do all these weird and perverted things. And, you know, if you're a man and you think you're a woman, you can have yourself surgically changed into what you might think is a woman. It's really not. You're always going to be a man. But he asked that question, but can we? You know, can we really do that? He says, there's the rub. It's very risky to assign Genesis today. The ACLU might sue. Ever since the Supreme Court decision of 1963, barring prayer from the public schools, any attempt to import not just prayer but biblical studies, religious tenets, and the like into the schools is liable to end up in court. That is why the Kansas School Board decision on evolution is so significant. Not because Kansas is the beginning of a creationist wave. As science, creationism is too fundamentally frivolous and evolution too intellectually powerful, but because the Kansas decision is an important cultural indicator. And here's what he means. He says, it represents the reaction of people of faith to the fact that all legitimate expressions of that faith in their children's public schooling are blocked by the new secular ethos. And so this country did not used to be so secular. I mean, it was founded by people of religion. And he said, in a society in which it is unconstitutional to post the Ten Commandments in school, creationism is a backdoor to religion brought in under the guise, the absurd yet constitutionally permitted guise of science. And he said, this pedagogic sleight of hand, by the way, did not originate with religious folk. Seculars have for years been using biology instruction as a backdoor for inculcating their values. A sex ed class on the proper placement of a condom is more than instruction in reproductive mechanics. It is a seminar, unacknowledged and tacit, but nonetheless powerful, on permissible sexual mores. And so he's got the knack. He sees the real problems there. And there's something else afloat. And again, he's after what? He's after the liberals. And it's really a great essay. He says, religion was invaluable in America's founding. Forming and flowering deserves a place in the schools. Indeed, it had that place for almost 200 years. A healthy country would teach its children evolution and the Ten Commandments. Now, I don't agree with that, but certainly a healthy country would teach its children the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because he says religion deserves a place in schools. And in a way, it does have a schools. Obviously, we know evolution is a religion. But even more than that, you know, they don't have any problems with teaching Buddhism or other Eastern religions or right. Islam in schools. Just, it's something new that we can teach the kids. And that's why they grow up. They're all doing yoga and, you know, Eastern religion is a strange fascination with young people. And so, you know, and part of it is that they learn about it in schools. Multiculturalism is this doctrine and liberalism that now I guess everyone has to take part in. So, but the one thing you can't teach about is the Bible. That's a no-no, because then there has to be separation of church and state. You can't, right. You can't bring religion into school only if it's with the Bible, though. I mean, obviously they don't teach that, you know, Eastern religions are true and we need to accept all that, but it's the principle of teaching about other religions and not teaching about the Bible.
Yeah, but they teach about Wicca.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you've got whole you have whole areas. I know there's parts of Texas that are whole communities are deeply Wiccan. Just in Texas, that's not very far from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And but they are allowed to do it, you know, because it's not the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that just, to me, that just proves that the Bible is worth having, and there's a lot of good to it. And you know, people just you know, don't want to admit that. You know, can you imagine if we could bring all the founding fathers back and they hear all this argument over you can't have religion in schools? You know, that would just drive me crazy. Well, Jude, that's all we have time for today's program. So I'd just like to thank you for being here. So next time, we'll continue our discussion of Charles Krauthammer's book of essays titled Things That Matter. I'll be bringing a new guest on that podcast with me, so you just have to listen in to find out who it is. You can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. And hey, by the way, let me know what you think of the book. Let me know what you think of Jude Fleury. You could do that. Let me know what you think of this young man's thinking. But I think he's just a great asset to JBL. But also, let me know what essays you're interested in. So you can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. Streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.